Welcome to Outbeat Now, part of Outbeat Radio on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. Outbeat Radio is a program that focuses on issues by, for, and about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities of Sonoma County and airs each Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Past shows and other information is available on our website at www.outbeatradio.org. I'm Jeff Basham, and I'm in studio tonight with my co-host, Greg Maralia. Tonight, we are devoting the entire hour to an important discussion about safe sex and 30 years since AIDS was discovered and identified as a deadly virus. Joining us live in the studio is a panel of experts from the Bay Area, including Sister My Imagination Runs Wild of the Russian River Sisters, who has 20 years of experience as a sex educator, Beth Woodruff, a youth educator from Face to Face, and Joseph Hunter Rose, who is an HIV counselor with the AIDS Health Project in San Francisco. We will be talking about the latest information about testing, treatment, and most importantly, prevention. Our panel will be answering questions submitted by our listeners and Outbeat Youth fans. Stay with us, but first, here's Greg Maralia with this week's Outbeat Radio News.
Good evening. This is Greg Maralia with your Outbeat Radio News for Sunday, February 27th, 2011. This week, as NBC on The Advocate reports, the door opened wide for same-sex marriage.
The Obama administration has told Congress that it will no longer defend the Defense of Marriage Act, an act that says marriage can only exist between a man and a woman.
White House spokesman John Carney.
The president directed the Attorney General not to defend because of the decision that it's not constitutional.
In a statement released today, Attorney General Eric Holder said the legal landscape has changed since the Defense of Marriage Act was passed 15 years ago. Holder's statement mentions the Supreme Court's ruling striking down criminal laws against homosexuality and the repeal of the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, along with the fact that several lower courts have found the Defense of Marriage Act unconstitutional.
That was John Carney with NBC News. And following the president's announcement, California Senator Dianne Feinstein said that she would join other Democrats to introduce legislation to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act altogether. And here in California, the battle over the constitutionality of Proposition 8 continued this week when the American Foundation for Equal Rights filed a motion asking the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to lift the stay on U.S. District Court Judge Walker's ruling, which, if lifted, would enable same-sex couples to once again marry. Attorney Ted Olson is also requesting that the California Supreme Court issue a ruling by the court's summer break regarding whether ProtectMarriage.com has legal standing to appeal Walker's decision to strike down Proposition 8. Now here's some important information for those of you preparing your taxes. The Internal Revenue Service has ruled that same-sex couples must be treated the same as heterosexual couples under a feature of California's tax law. Advocates for the change say that it's the first time the agency has acknowledged gay couples as a unit for tax purposes. The change reverses a 2006 IRS ruling and opens a tax benefit to many same-sex couples that wasn't available before. Specifically, the agency said that nearly 58,000 couples who are registered as domestic partners in California must combine their income and each report half of it on their separate tax returns. Same-sex couples account for an estimated 95% of the state's domestic partnerships. Partnership status is also available to heterosexual couples in which one partner is over the age of 62. Last Thursday, the Horizons Foundation presented a seminar, Legal Changes and the IRS Tax Filing Rules for LGBT Couples, at the Napa First United Methodist Church. Presenters Karen Stogdill of KKS Tax Associates and Deb Kinney of DLK Law Group help same-sex couples understand what they need to know before filing their 2010 federal tax returns. Karen Stogdill said, "The tax issue is complicated in California, one of nine states with community property rules. Those rules require married couples to treat all income as joint property for a variety of purposes. If they're filing taxes separately, the Supreme Court has held that they must combine their incomes together and then divide the sum equally. This is the first time the IRS has given equal status to gay couples. IRS representatives wouldn't confirm this statement, but couldn't point to any other comparable decision. The shift is due to a 2007 change in state law. That change dealt with the way the state calculates income for California taxes. Nevada and Washington State are also community property states that recognize domestic partnerships, and so couples there may also be affected. Now here's your community calendar for the coming week. On Monday, February 28th at 7 p.m., PFLAG will meet at the Positive Images Center at 312 Chin Street. And at 7:30 p.m. at the same location, Positive Images Adult Support Group will meet starting at 7:30 p.m. And on Tuesday, March 1st, the Trans Group will meet at Positive Images, 312 Chin Street. And this meeting is for trans-identified and questioning persons, as well as their family, friends, and allies. And on Wednesday, March 2nd, Marin County's Women Seeking Women will gather at Jason's Restaurant on Drake's Landing Road from 6 until 8 p.m. For more information about these and other events happening in and around our community, check out www.gaysonoma.com. If you have an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure and tell us about it by going to our website at outbeatradio.com. Just click on Outbeat Radio News. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Now, right here on KRCB Radio.
Scientists at the National Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta today released the results of a study which shows that the lifestyle of some male homosexuals has triggered an epidemic of a rare form of cancer. Robert Bazell now in Atlanta.
Bobby Campbell of San Francisco and Billy Walker of New York both suffer from a mysterious newly discovered disease which affects mostly homosexual men, but has also been found in heterosexual men and women. The condition severely weakens the body's ability to fight disease. Many victims get a rare form of cancer called Kaposi's sarcoma. Others get an infection known as pneumocystis pneumonia. Researchers know of 413 people who have contracted the condition in the past year. One third have died and none have been cured.
Death didn't scare me. It was living with this for a long time. That's more frightening than death.
Investigators have examined the habits of homosexuals for clues.
I was in the fast lane at one time in terms of the way that I lived my life, and now I'm not.
The best guess is that some infectious agent is causing it. Today, researchers here at the National Centers for Disease Control said they had found several cases where people who had been sex partners both had the condition. The scientists say this probably means they are dealing with some new, deadly, sexually transmitted disease.
The disease called AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, sounds less than deadly, more like a diet pill. AIDS has struck only a reported 1,500 people, but it has killed almost 600 of them, and as yet no one with AIDS has been cured.
Puzzling new disease has appeared the past couple of years that is spreading rapidly among homosexuals, and it is a disease that is fatal.
Do you are raising the possibility that people are dismissing it because it strikes mostly the gay community?
There is no question in my mind. If this were happening to you in the white, straight, middle-class community, it would have been attended to a long time ago.
Congress wants to know what to do about AIDS. Victims of the disease say the government has done nothing and has no plan to. Committee members were told that victims are often gay men or IV drug users, groups already discriminated against.
Now 717 with a question, is the deadly disease AIDS now a health threat to the general population?
The government today tried to reassure people that there's no evidence AIDS is breaking out into the general population. Assistant Secretary for Health, Edward Brandt.
What's important is that there is no reason for panic among the general population.
It was the late 1980s, some of the darkest days of the AIDS epidemic. At the time, there was only one drug to treat the virus, AZT, and little was known about treating the opportunistic infections killing most AIDS patients.
We were seeing friends die.
I had a friend who was dying of what turned out to be AIDS.
I lost several friends, both here and in New York. I was quite affected.
I could see that my friends were all dying.
People around you were dying. And they were your patients.
So many people are dead, and I could have just as easily been one of them.
And then one day I went to the airport, and I collapsed on the ground. And I couldn't get up off the ground.
People were either sick, dead, or, waiting to die. People were devastated. It was just a horrible time.
Also devastating was a lack of swift or decisive action on the part of the federal government and the pharmaceutical industry. Failure to fund meaningful research and the glacially slow drug approval process meant many would die waiting for the drugs to combat AIDS.
One day in Paul Rothman's living room, a group of people got together and figured out that they needed to speed up research.
While ACT UP picketed outside FDA headquarters, Dr. Paul Rothman, a physician with the Pacific Oaks Medical Group in Los Angeles, led an end run around the establishment.
Paul had the ability and sort of an entrepreneurial spirit. He was very committed and great organizer, so perfect person.
Dr. Rothman, joined by friends, colleagues, and activists, including Martin Delaney, Jim Cordy, Matthew Rushton, William Zimmerman, Bob Homan, and many others, established Search Alliance, science, education, and research to combat HIV, a small research initiative bringing together physicians and researchers willing to test worthy drugs and compounds that the mainstream medical establishment couldn't or wouldn't investigate.
That was sort of the genesis of Search, was bringing these physicians together, conducting this trial, and then not only seeing the need for that kind of research capability, but that there was already a core of individuals within the community who were capable and willing to do the work.
And welcome back to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. You were just listening to a montage of early AIDS news footage starting in the early 80s. Thank you very much to my co-host, Red Moralia, for putting that together for our show this evening. My name is Jeff Basham, and I am your host for the evening. We are pleased to have a live panel of experts in the studio with us to share the latest information about testing, treatment, and prevention of sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV. Let's start out by going around and having you all introduce yourselves. Tell us your name and a little bit about the organization that you're here representing and what you do. And we'll start out with Sister Maya.
Hi, I'm Sister Maya. Imagination Runs Wild. I'm a sister with the Russian River Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And I, in my secular life, have spent a lot of time. I'm a very passionate educator around sexuality and STD, HIV prevention education issues. And I'm here to share some good information with you all tonight. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, Sister Maya. Glad to have you here. And Joseph?
Hi, I'm Joseph Hunter Rose, and I'm with the AIDS Health Project in San Francisco. And I've been with him for about a year now as an HIV test counselor. And what we do there is specialize in rapid HIV testing and do a lot of outreach to the gay community.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
And Beth?
Hi, my name is Beth Woodruff, and I'm a volunteer with Face to Face. Face to Face is a nonprofit organization located in Santa Rosa. And it's a network agency for HIV-positive clients in the Sonoma County area.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all for joining us tonight. This is going to be an excellent hour of information. And Reid?
Well, you know, tonight we'd like to start out by talking about all types of sexually transmitted diseases, including testing methods, treatment, and most importantly, prevention. What are some of the sexually transmitted diseases we should all be concerned about? I mean, HIV is clearly the big one, but what are the other STDs out there that are problematic?
I guess what we're seeing right now is what we have to be looking out for is gonorrhea and syphilis and chlamydia in the community, specifically in San Francisco. There's definitely a rise in syphilis rates in San Francisco right now, along with herpes, which is a very common STD that people don't know that they have. So keeping an eye out for those things as well.
So it's not just about going to get tested for HIV. We really should be being inclusive of all the different types of diseases that are out there.
Yeah, anything you can get sexually transmitted to you, yeah.
And STDs tend to travel together, so sometimes one or more of them may arrive together in an infection of another person.
Right, right.
When should someone go and get tested? Should they get tested, well, for all STDs at one time, or should they do maybe an HIV test and then other tests, or the other way around?
If you are sexually active and you have more than one sexual partner, it's definitely a good time to get tested. I would say around 3 to 6 months to get tested at least once a year. And it's good to get tested also for STDs if you are getting an HIV test. Like she said, that they do travel together, STDs and HIV. And so, yeah.
So once every 3 to 6 months, not less than once a year.
Yeah.
Is the recommendation.
If you're sexually active.
If you're sexually active.
Okay, of course.
I would also say, this is Beth, I would also say after unprotected sex, of course, and after each new partner.
Sure. And isn't there something about waiting about 6 months or that the infection period can not show up for 6 months? The
yes.
Infection?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's also a good thing to have in mind. On that same line, should women get tested? And if so, how frequently? And what about men? And does sexual orientation have anything to do with it?
STDs actually don't know anything about what gender you are or how you orient your sexuality. All they know is that there is a body for them to move from one participant to another participant. So the real thing is it doesn't really matter who your partners are, but if you are having sex that is exposing you to another person's bodily fluids, you probably want to go ahead and get yourself tested.
Is there a certain group of people, a certain orientation that should get tested more frequently than another?
Along with gender, orientation, STDs don't single out any orientation as well. So if you are sexually active, to get tested, gay, straight. Anything, yeah.
Technically, women are biologically more capable of getting STDs, so it's easier for a woman to get an STD than a male, but it doesn't make it any less important for both genders to get tested as frequently.
Thank you.
Well, this month, this last month, in preparation for the show, we asked some of our listeners to send us in questions, and particularly those listeners on the Outbeat Youth website. And we already answered one of the questions, which is, if I'm not sexually active, how often do I need to get tested? So I'm going to skip to the next one. If a person is monogamous in their relationship, do you still recommend that they get tested?
Yes. Regular testing is extremely important.
I think that the idea of monogamy, this is maybe a different topic to dive into more deeply, but could be different for different people. Sometimes people may identify as being a monogamous couple, but maybe actually engaging in oral sex with other people, and that's defined as part of their monogamy relationship. So I don't think you should necessarily let a term like that be a decisive factor. If you've been exposed to new partners and you've been exposed in a risky way, you should get tested.
And do you all advocate that both partners go down together to get tested, or get tested at the same time? What's the safest recommendation for folks?
This is Joseph. I definitely think going down and getting tested is a good thing to do, definitely having a support there either way. And I think that Sister Maya brings up a good point, talking about getting tested and defining what monogamy means in your relationship. Monogamy for some people meaning not having any other sexual partners, but also can meaning not having a specific type of sex as well. So defining that within your relationship is important.
So really, it sounds like communication between the two partners is really, really important.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, our next question or concern that came from our community was, what are the current types of testing available? And more specifically, a concern was, how accurate really are the tests? Can there be false positives, things like that? And I'll throw that to Joseph, since you're really in that line.
Yeah, at the AIDS Health Project, we do rapid HIV testing, meaning you get your results in 20 minutes. The tests are very accurate, over 97% accurate, and that's the testing that I do know about, is the rapid HIV testing. There are some tests that if you go see your personal care or your provider, your own doctor, that they take up to a week to get back to you with STD and HIV testing as well.
Is the test that takes a week more accurate or less accurate, or is there a difference at all?
If they do an ELISA test or a rapid HIV test, it's the same exact test.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So is it just like a policy or a procedure that makes it take a week as opposed to 20 minutes?
There are some other tests out there that take a little bit longer to do. There's an RNA test that actually tests for the HIV virus. The ELISA test and the rapid HIV testing we do at the AIDS Health Project is checks for the HIV antibody, and we can check for the antibody in 20 minutes. The RNA test takes a little bit longer to do.
Okay. Okay. And I know when people get their results back, sometimes they're given them in a like the 20-minute window, but sometimes they actually have to make an appointment with a counselor. Is that is or do you always have to see a counselor to get results? Is that like a law in California or something?
No, not at all. At the AIDS Health Project, we do offer a 20-minute counseling session with an HIV test counselor after you get your HIV test, and it's just to go over some risk reductions and talk about your sexual activity.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What does face-to-face do? What's your testing process?
They also do rapid HIV testing, and it's a 20-minute test. Same kind of policy. We offer counseling. It's not mandatory, but we highly recommend it. And it's really just a kind of it allows the clients to kind of observe and analyze their behavior and talk about safer sex practices and give a little of education. So,
how is the data that's gathered during that interview used? Or is there a data gathering?
The test results?
Yeah. Well, the data how old someone is. Do you ask questions that would reveal like what age group of the population is engaging in what kinds of sexual acts and things like that?
As far as I know, all the information given, if anyone is getting tested, is completely confidential. It's just kept within the organization, and they can also opt for anonymous testing. So, if they were positive, the names would not go to the state.
Is that the same at the AIDS Health Project?
Yes, if they're testing anonymously, their names are not attached to the results at all. Yeah.
Okay.
So I have a follow-up question to that then. So if someone comes in for STD testing, HIV, syphilis, the whole gamut, and they do identify themselves, are you all mandated to report those names and the results to the state?
Certain STDs are mandate reportable by the state if they have a positive result, and certain STDs aren't. HIV is one of them. I believe syphilis is another one.
And what's the purpose for that?
It's mostly for statistical purposes. Okay. To try to get an accurate number of how many people are infected.
Okay. Well, Beth, you educate youth. And so this next question comes from one of our young listeners. Justin in Roanoke Park said, I really hate needles. Is there any other way of getting tested for STDs and HIV without having to face a needle?
Yes, there is. And actually, chlamydia and gonorrhea are both tested with urine samples, so that's painless process. And as far as HIV, yes, there's prick of the finger, which still is a needle, but there's oral swabs. And only two organizations I know of right now in the county are doing oral swabs, which is face to face and DAC. So those are options as well.
What about the San Francisco AIDS Project? What kind of testing do you offer?
We offer the finger prick for HIV testing. We do the finger prick. I know that there was a couple organizations that used to do the oral swab in San Francisco that now resort to the finger prick. Yeah.
Now, I had read that maybe the oral swab wasn't as accurate or it wasn't as complete of a test. What are your thoughts about that?
I definitely think that the finger pricking going straight to the source, the blood, is more accurate. I don't know a lot about the oral swab since I haven't worked with it. I just know that we've used the finger prick and it's been pretty accurate for us.
And I know we talked about test results coming back within 20 minutes. So are the results coming back as fast with both blood and the cheek swab?
Yes, finger prick and the oral.
Cheek swabs actually are a test that takes a little bit of skin cells from the inside of your cheek and looks for the HIV virus or the antibodies to the virus in that sample.
Okay.
Okay. We have another question from one of our listeners. We already talked about a little bit of it, but I definitely want to address his question. So Derek in Redwood City asks, the last time I went to a clinic to get tested, I had to go through a counseling session just to take the test. Are there any home tests that will work?
This is
go
Beth.
Ahead, Beth.
Not that I've know of. Not at least not with HIV, and I haven't heard of any for any STD myself.
Either of you heard of any?
I believe there is I don't know if it still exists, but there used to be a home test for HIV that you could purchase, and you sent your sample, your specimen in yourself. You pricked your finger, and then you had to call in and get your results. So you talk to somebody to get your results. So in a way, there should always be a person involved in giving you that information. It's a lot to deal with if you do have a diagnosis that's positive, or if you've been putting yourself at risk and you're even wondering what your status is and you're getting a test, probably there's some stuff going on that you might want to check out. So in general, it's not a good idea to test yourself at home. It's better to be supported by somebody else that has information and can help you get through that process.
I think support is definitely something that's very important during that time. So that's something to keep in mind.
Well, while we're on the subject of testing, why don't we have both of the organizations represented here. Tell us about the testing services that you have available and how someone can go and get tested. Why don't we start with Face-to-Face here in Sonoma County?
So, yeah, like I said before, Face-to-Face has the rapid HIV testing. It's the 20-minute ordeal, and we test every Tuesday, 1 to 4. It's drop-in, no appointment necessary. The entire process for someone to just walk in, it would take probably about 30 minutes, including the paperwork, the test, and getting the result. And during while we're waiting for the result, that's when we take the client and counsel them on just, like I said before, you know, their safer sex practices and just give them a little education. And, yeah, it's not mandatory, but we definitely recommend it.
Now, do you have to be 18 years old to come down and get tested?
I don't believe so. I don't believe so.
And this is a fairly new service that Face-to-Face just started this last year, right?
Yes. Yeah. Brand new.
Great. Well, we're happy to have that because, as I understand it, the testing service here in the county was cut because of budget cuts.
Yeah, a lot of clinics have been closing, too. So a lot of places, options for people to go get tested has just been shutting down. So it's great to have this.
I just want to ask a quick follow-up question on the age issue. Is there an age at all? I mean, if a 12-year-old could get down there to Face-to-Face and wanted a STD test, is that okay? Do they have to have their parents' permission?
I don't believe they do.
Okay.
To my knowledge.
Okay. Good information.
Joseph, how about your organization?
The AIDS Health Project is you can actually call to make an appointment, or we actually have drop-in hours as well. The number to call if you want to make an appointment is 415-502-TEST. And you can also make an appointment online at www.ucsf.ahp.org. And we're located on 1930 Market Street. And we also have drop-in hours on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 5:45 and 6:30, and on Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 11:45. And you can get a rapid HIV test, which comes back in 20 minutes. And we also do a limited STD test as well.
Yeah. Great.
And all that information is going to be available on outbeatradio.org, both about Face-to-Face and the AIDS Health Project. All the details of all the testing times and locations and websites and phone numbers and everything. So if you didn't catch some of that, you can always listen to the show again, or you can just go ahead and check our website. All of our shows are archived on outbeatradio.org also. So we're going to switch focuses here a little bit and go down a line of questions related to treatment. We were talking about testing before, so we're going to go to treatment. So if a person gets tested and the tests come back positive for one of the STDs, what happens? How is the news delivered? You've talked about counseling. Can you talk a little bit more deeply about that?
Yeah, so this is Beth. At Face-to-Face, you know, we'll call it a preliminary positive. We get that first positive. Like, you know, those tests are really highly accurate, but we still do ask for a blood sample at that point so that then they would wait a week to get those test results back. At that time, though, we would offer counseling, and it would be kind of short-term planning type of counseling, like, you know, do you have anyone to talk to about this, kind of basic information about HIV, and just really trying to form the next step.
Okay.
In terms of other STDs and getting a positive result, STDs come in a variety of different ways. Some of them are viral STDs. Some of them are a bacterial infection. Some of them are treatable and will go away, and some of them are things that you're going to have with you for the rest of your life. So there's a lot of variation in how you're going to deal with a positive result on depending on what your diagnosis was.
Anything,
yes.
Joseph?
Yeah, our treatment center is exactly like Beth's treatment center. We have a 20-minute counseling session, and you get your results there orally. And STDs, besides HIV aside, STDs actually take 8 days after you have gotten the the test for it, you have to call back and you have to give your unique testing code that we provide for you, and you get treatment, or they schedule an appointment for you to get treatment for regular STDs. And HIV, we do call it a preliminary positive, and they come back a week later to confirm the HIV test that they had a week before.
Okay. Well, we are at about the halfway point of our show, if you can even start to imagine that. So you are listening to KRCB FM Santa Rosa. This is Outbeat Now, part of Outbeat Radio. And we'll be back after this music break. Very appropriately, we're going to be listening to I Want Your Sets by George Michaels. Are listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB FM Santa Rosa, and we were just listening to I Want Your Sets by George Michaels. Joining us live in studio tonight is a panel of experts from the Bay Area, including Sister My Imagination Runs Wild of the Russian River Sisters, who has 20 years of experience as a sex educator, Beth Woodruff as a youth educator from Face to Face, and Joseph Hunter Rose, who is an HIV counselor with the AIDS Health Project in San Francisco. So before the break, we were talking about treatment, and we had just started talking about that, of HIV and STDs. And I'd like to continue there. And we have a question that comes from a listener. What about herpes? I think a lot of people think that herpes isn't serious. What are the treatments available and the risks if you don't get treated?
So kind of like Sister Maya had said earlier, there are different – STDs are either bacterial or viral. This is a viral one, herpes. So it's treatable but not curable. it stays with, it's going to stay with you for life. The risks, if untreated, is kind of a, I mean, the risks are going to be there whether you treat it or not, really. If you, there are medications out there that you can take to lessen the severity of the symptoms, but, you know, complications with childbirth, things like that could occur with those type of, with herpes, and yeah.
So recommended to get treatment, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, and it's going to be, I mean, everyone's going to have different symptoms. Some people, a lot of people actually, I think, especially with herpes, because it's such a common STD, it's asymptomatic, which means there are no symptoms anyway.
And that's also known as HPV, correct? If people, or is that
no,
something different?
No, no. Okay. HPV is actually genital warts.
Oh, whoops. Yeah. Sorry.
It's okay.
Hey, you know, there I learned something new. Okay, and Greg, I think we have something from Michael in Oklahoma City, right?
Across the country, we get a question that says, I've been afraid to get tested for HIV because of what I would have to go through if I was positive. I've heard that the drugs can kill you faster than HIV. What are the current drug treatments, and you know, what are your responses to that?
There's a lot of different treatments that are out there, and in terms of the treatment that would be used for you, that's between you and your physician. The treatments have come a long way over the years. In the past, people have had to take lots and lots of pills every day, and a lot of the different treatments have been reduced down to a single dose, once a day dosage. And there's a lot less side effects today with a lot of the treatments that are available. But it is still a rigorous routine of taking pills every single day to keep yourself healthy and keep your immune system in check.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. When you are getting treated for HIV, it's definitely good to talk to your doctor and see what kind of medication works with you. Different medications do have different side effects, but you can get it reduced down to having one pill a day to be treated for HIV.
What's the philosophy today? Are doctors starting people on meds right away, or are they still holding off until the viral count or T-cell count drops to a certain level?
I think that's something that they're still exploring. Some doctors have a theory that hit hard and early to reduce the viral load at a very early level and set the viral load point at a low target point. And some people believe in waiting until your immune system is actually being compromised to the point where you would need the medical support. And I think that the jury's still out on which is the best way to go.
Okay.
So along the lines of talking about needing medicine is a question that we want to know. Someone wants to know, what is if someone doesn't have health insurance? Are there agencies that can help fund their treatment and get them the medicine and treatment that they need?
Yes, there's state money, actually. I mean, you can go to a community health center, any community health center. They have various different health insurances to sign you up for. You know, Guerneville, Russian River Health Center, West County Health Centers, that's a one definitely popular in this area. And they'll usually sign you up on sliding scale, Medi-Cal, something like that. And that should definitely help cut down the costs or at least pay for those type of medications.
So you mentioned Guerneville and West County. Are there any in Santa Rosa, Petaluma?
Yes, yeah. They're all kinds. That's the one I had more familiarity with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In terms of HIV, there's a program called ADAP, which is the AIDS Drug Assistance Program, and that's a state federal funded program that helps support people who don't have insurance to provide them with their HIV medications.
Along with the state and federal programs that they do have, San Francisco has a more specific one for residents of San Francisco. It's not health insurance, but it's a more medical care. It's called Healthy San Francisco that really tailors to individuals that are not able to afford basic health care needs, and they set them up with a doctor and medication that they can take for HIV or any other kind of STDs that they do have. Yeah.
Great. Right. So we're now going to shift focus again and go into prevention type questions. So, Gray, do you have our first?
Yeah, this comes from an anonymous listener, and I think the gist of the question is, can lesbian couples and gay men, male couples, spread an STD to each other as easily as a straight couple can? We sort of talked about this at the beginning, but we want to revisit that a little bit.
Yes, this is Beth. It's really just about the body fluids, and it's not about whether, you know, sexual orientation at all. It's really just one body fluid getting mixed in with someone else's body fluid. So,
and are you playing with a partner that's infected or not infected?
Yeah.
good advice, and things to think about. So what are the basic rules that apply to preventing all kinds of sexually transmitted diseases? I think we all have an answer to this question, but who wants to take it first?
In terms of HIV, there's four bodily fluids that if somebody was infected could potentially be a fluid that if passed to another person could infect them, and they are blood, semen, vaginal secretions, and breast milk. I think I can say all those things on the air because I just did.
Yes, you
and
can.
So you want to be thinking about if one of those fluids is involved and if you're swapping it and sharing it with another person. And the fluid needs to have a way to enter the other person's body. If you get it on your skin, you're not going to cause an infection. And that needs to happen through a direct opening in the skin or through a mucous membrane. And the mucous membranes are your eyes, your nose, the back of your throat, the tip of the penis, the vagina, the urethra, and the anus.
Anything else?
Also talking about basic rules, I mean, obviously one is getting tested frequently to know if you have an STD or HIV, and also kind of coming up with a risk reduction plan that works with you. For example, maybe asking all of your partners their HIV status, their STD status, and keeping proactive about your health, your sexual health.
Yeah. Kind of goes along with communication as a healthy thing in any relationship and sexual communication.
Communication is a great safer sex technique. The more that you can talk openly and honestly with a partner and find out about their past experiences or current thoughts and ideas, the safer you'll probably be.
Certainly. And also just there's the basic wear a condom.
Yeah, exactly.
Just wear it. Póntelo. So all and, as thick as you see.
And face-to-face, I'm sure, provides condoms.
Yes.
At their location.
There's actually a lot of organizations out there that you can get free condoms at. So
certainly, yeah. Being a member of the Russian River Sisters myself, I know that we do a lot of condom outreach, and they're available in all the bars in Guerneville and everything. So, yeah, you just look around the corner. You don't have to pay money. So there are a lot of myths out there that came up when I was discussing this show and questions with people that wanted me to put questions on the list. And they wanted to suggest that, or they were suggesting that oral sex is safer than intercourse or anal sex. Is this true?
Depending on what STD you're talking about, it can be true or it cannot be true. It can definitely reduce your risk for some things like HIV to perform oral sex, but it's not true for other STDs like gonorrhea.
But it's not completely 100%, is it?
No, not at all.
Okay. Someone said, yeah, oral sex, you can't get HIV from that. So
only 100%
I just want to,
thing is abstinence.
Yeah, I want to make that very clear out there. And anything else on that question before we move on? Greg?
Well, Beth, this is probably a good question for you. I don't know a school in the area here that teaches about safe sex practices specifically for LGBT youth. When you talk with youth audiences, what are kind of the basic messages that you have for them?
Well, really, there shouldn't be a difference in the content of what you're talking about. I think the problem with a lot of organizations that do go into schools is they're heterosexist, so they'll leave out people by saying, a female condom instead of insertive condom, for example. Well, they don't even talk about dental dams, what a dental dam is, things like that. And just remembering to talk about partners and not necessarily boyfriend-girlfriend type of thing. But same rules apply. So the content shouldn't differ.
Joseph, you were telling me earlier doing some work with some curriculum in schools. Is there a move or a push to try to get sex education that's also geared for LGBT students?
Oh yeah, I think not just for the organization I work for, but I think as a country, I mean, we're always trying to get comprehensive sex education in schools and kind of steer away from the abstinence only. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
So Greg, I have a question for you on this one. I'm making you a member of the panel. Okay. since you have a law background, how is the law different for LGBT youth and sex? As opposed to straight youth.
Yeah, there's a whole different risk here for young people, specifically in the law. You know, and essentially in California, anybody under the age of 18 is not recognized to have the legal ability to give consent to have sex. So essentially every sexual act that we've been talking about tonight with involving someone under the age of 18, even if both parties are under the age of 18, is illegal. And for LGBT youth specifically, particularly males, for example, oral sex, anal sex, they're both felonies. They're serious crimes. And it becomes particularly dangerous if one of the partners is over 18. If a person is over the age of 18, they're considered an adult, and engaging any of those sexual acts, even if both parties are consenting, and even if there's just a year or so difference in between them, that would be a felony crime, and you could end up going to prison for it. So it's a really serious difference. You know, straight teens have, I won't call it an advantage, but the crime is much less. And I think that's sort of a reflection of our current cultural values around sex. We still, you know, don't recognize in the same way homosexual sex between young people that we do straight couples. That's just my opinion.
Well, thank you very much for that opinion or for that information. So jumping back to the talk a few second ago about condoms, we've heard a lot about the importance of using condoms, but I know of a lot of guys who say that using condoms just doesn't feel the same and that condoms take away from the intimacy of sex. Are there other alternatives to condoms? And I've heard of drugs that you can take ahead of time prior to having unprotected sex that'll prevent an HIV infection. How true is that? And what are the condom alternatives?
I definitely think condom is the most effective way to prevent HIV. But what we try to do at the AIDS Health Project is come up with again, I said earlier, a harm reduction or a risk reduction plan that works with the client so they can still do the things that they want to do but lower their risk when it comes to HIV. It doesn't make them totally abstinent from contracting HIV, but it definitely lowers their risk.
One little trick that you can do if you feel like condoms lessen your sensation when you're being sexual with another partner is before you put the condom on your penis, go ahead and put a couple of drops of lubrication in the tip of the condom before you roll it down over your penis, and it'll give you a lot more sensation and slippery kind of feeling that'll make you feel a lot less like you have something there, increase the sensation for you.
Good tips there, Sister Maya.
Yeah, as far as the new drugs, I really haven't heard anything. I was talking a little bit about this with my supervisor at Face to Face, and you know, there is some research that's surfacing about them, but apparently, you know, what we've heard is that the medications, that they're extremely expensive, first of all, and they're not 100% effective. So, you know, you're going to spend all this money and then maybe you have a 40% chance, who knows. Don't quote me on those numbers, you know, of not passing an STD or HIV. So, you know, it's...
So really it's not worth the money and not worth the risk.
It's still something that's being explored by the scientific community. There are a number of test studies that are going on right now, which are looking at using a HIV drug as a prophylaxis. And I would say that they're still collecting data, and it may or may not be something that you feel comfortable participating in.
I get that question asked a lot during sessions with clients about this medication that they've heard about that can prevent HIV, and that's a lot of, I guess, hearsay. I think that those are, you know, it does reduce your risk, but again, there's no specific evidence that says it eliminates your risk altogether. But that's still in the process of people trying to find what you can take.
Okay, well. Looks like we kind of have a good answer to that question. It's all about risk and what your personal risk level is or what you're willing to accept. So we have another question from across the country, from Georgia, really?
Sure. I've heard that certain types of lubricants can prevent STDs, and maybe the greater question here is there a type of lubricant that is safer to use with condoms? And is there a lubricant product out there that can reduce HIV or STD transmission?
As far as I know, I have never heard that lubricants have anything to do with STDs. It's really just for the
safety, you know, making it easier for the condom to go over the penis or, you know, whatever. But it's, yeah, as far as the what's better to use, water-based lubricants with condoms is the best. You don't want to use petroleum-based because it's going to mess with the latex.
I think maybe what the caller was wondering about, there are some lubrications that have nonoxynil 9, which is a spermicide in them. Those types of lubrications actually tend to be pretty harsh on people's bodies. Sometimes they give people reactions or rashes or discomfort. And in general, it's been pretty encouraged by most of the sex education community that I've been part of to kind of avoid those types of lubrications with those chemicals inside of them.
And I believe that's, it would still be more of a kind of a contraceptive more than a protection of STDs still. And yeah.
Okay. And we have a question from one of our younger listeners, that he asks, if I'm with someone, how do I know if they have a sexually transmitted disease? What should I look for? Well, we already talked about communication, but what are the physical signs of many of the common STDs?
One of the things about STDs is that you can't always tell by looking.
Yeah.
So. Are there any physical signs to look for?
There very well could be bumps, rashes, sores, unusual discharge, you know, things like that. However, like Sister Mai said, a lot of times people are just asymptomatic, so just looking is not going to be.
It is a good idea to take a look. It's a good idea to see your partner with the lights on and not just have the entire experience happen in the pitch dark, if you can handle that. It's pretty marvelous.
But it definitely all boils back down to communication, too. You know, like, probably better to have the conversation first than
wondering.
And if you're
really thinking about starting a sexual relationship with somebody, you might want to consider both of you getting tested so that you know what your status is before you start that relationship.
Could be a great first date.
That's a really good suggestion.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Joseph, you had something?
Yeah, definitely getting that talk out earlier is better. Talking about their sexual history and talking about what they know and what they don't know about HIV and STDs and how it plays a part in their sexual life.
Okay. Yeah.
And when you have that conversation, it's really important. It may be easier to have it over dinner than when you're in the throes of passion and ready to get it on. That might not be the best time to get into some of those more tricky and complicated questions.
Sounds like a good idea. So we're almost at the end of our show. Wow, we only have a few minutes left. So as we wrap up, I want to ask each one of you, what is the most important advice that you can give our listeners around creating and maintaining a disease-free sex life? And we'll start with Beth.
Well, like I said before, wearing condoms is a good first step, definitely. Regular testing and educating yourself. Also with communication, of course, but definitely even just educating yourself, I think, can do wonders.
And thank you, Beth, for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much.
And Joseph?
Just being very proactive about your sex life and being a frequent tester for STDs and HIV, and also not being scared to ask your partners about their behavior and their history sexually. Yeah.
Okay, and thank you for joining us also. And Sister Maya?
Well, when we become sisters of perpetual indulgence, one of the vows that we take is to expiate stigmatic guilt. And I think one of the most important things when you're starting to look at your sexuality is to know that everybody has a sexuality, that yours is okay and exactly the way it is. And as long as you're consensual with yourself and your partners, and you practice as safe sex as you can. I think a lot of times people don't protect themselves because they feel so much insecurity and guilt about what their identity or their behaviors are. Whatever you're doing is okay, and love yourself and support yourself, and you're more likely to make choices around prevention that are going to support keeping yourself safe if you truly care about yourself and want to protect yourself.
Great. Let's give these websites one more time for both the organizations that are here tonight. Face-to-Face, where can people go to get information about your organization and testing?
The website is www.f2f.org.
And that's F, the number two,
yes.
F.org.
Yes.
Correct?
Okay. Correct.
And your offices are located right in downtown Santa Rosa and the...
Yes.
And that's where the testing is done as well, right?
Yes, on 2nd Street.
Great. Joseph, how about you?
Our website is www.ucsf.ahp.org.
Fantastic.
And that wraps up our show for tonight. We'd like to thank our three guests tonight for sharing their time and expertise with us. We've been talking with Sister My Imagination Runs Wild, who is a longtime sets educator and a member of the Russian River Sisters, Elizabeth Woodruff, who is a youth educator with Face to Face, and Joseph Hunter Rose, who is an HIV counselor with the AIDS Health Project of San Francisco. Thank you all for being with us tonight on Outbeat Now.
Join Jeff and I next month on the fourth Sunday of March as we interview two LGBT restaurant owners about how they've made their eating establishments so popular and how they're giving back to the LGBT community. On Outbeat Youth, I'll be introducing you to Fit for Equality, a new LGBT youth organization here in the North Bay. And we'll also have that brave student from Maria Carrillo High School who recently came out to her entire school at an assembly, so you will not want to miss that show.
And I'll be back next week with Sheridan Gold and Dr. Diana Grayer for Living Proof. Sharon Dye will be talking to LGBT community members whose hard work throughout their lives have gotten them to where they are today. An inspiring evening showing how hard work really does pay off. That's next Sunday at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB FM Santa Rosa. Good night, everyone.
Now, public media is the subject of a critical debate in Washington. Funding to keep public television and radio, and with it their quality news and cultural programming on the air, is in question. 170 million Americans engage with public media every month. You're one of them, and we're asking for your voice. Go to 170millionamericans.org and sign up for the campaign, Help Protect the Station You Love.